Well, good afternoon, and thanks for the invitation to come and talk about the Central Coast today. So I just wanted to cover, where does Central Coast water come from, and who are our principal users, and what are the main concerns about our water supply and the quality of that water, and what are some of the solutions that we're currently working on. So this is a map that was published in National Geographic in 2010, and I think it shows very effectively what I would call the water grid in California. And as Sabrina was showing, we move water through water transfers all over the state. And the reason I entitled this talk "Off the Water Grid" is, let me point to the Central Coast here. We're right there. There's no canals that bring water to us. We're definitely off the water grid there. We have to be totally self-reliant for our water resources. And zooming in on the Central Coast, you see the Monterey Bay right here. And the two valleys watersheds I'm going to talk about mostly are the Salinas Valley and the Lower Pajaro Valley here. Both are very important in terms of production of leafy green salad crops and berries. And there's a large population that lives there. And we are right next to one of the largest national marine sanctuaries in the mainland, United States. And a lot of the data and information I'll talk about was provided to me from our Monterey County Water Resource Agency and the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. So if it was not for the coastal mountains that we have on the coast, we wouldn't have much of a water supply there. This is a view from an airplane of the San Lucia Mountains near Big Sur. And so when winter storms come off the Pacific Ocean, we get orographic lift, and we probably get 2 to 5 times more water up on the top of the mountains through rainfall than at sea level. And if we didn't have those mountains, these storms would just go right by the Central Coast, and we'd be more of a desert. So those are just an important feature. Groundwater is our major source of water. It's by far the biggest source that we have on the Central Coast. And the challenge is to get that rainfall. We don't have much of any snowpack to infiltrate into the ground before it flows down to the ocean. If we focus in on the Salinas Valley, in 2013, we pumped about 500,000 acre feet of water. And if you're not familiar with this term, acre foot, think of a football field with water about 30 centimeters high or a foot high spread all over it. That's 500,000 of those football fields of water. This was pumped out of about 1,800 active wells, and interestingly, 91% of that water is used for agriculture. And because it's used for agriculture, agriculture has to be an important part of managing that water. And we have no ability to import water from other regions, so we got to manage that water effectively. Our main issues on the Central Coast are supply, of course, especially during the drought. But hand in hand with supply is seawater intrusion. And as Sabrina is pointing out, if you overpump, our aquifers go right out to the ocean, so the ocean water can come into those aquifers. Just as important is flooding, and it's the same type of issue that we have in the Central Valley. If we get too much rainfall, our rivers overflow, and our farmland and communities are affected by flooding. Now, you can have a lot of water, but if it's not a good quality, it doesn't benefit anyone, right? And so just as groundwater is important for agriculture, is important for our drinking water supply. And so we have a lot of issues with nitrate contamination, our groundwater, because of the intensive agriculture we have there. as well as pollution of surface water from runoff, principally from agricultural fields. This is a summary of the annual rainfall back all the way from the 1870s to the present in Salinas. And we get a range from 5 to over 25 inches of precipitation per year as rainfall. The black symbols, the black circles, are when we've had flooding events along the Salinas River. And you can see there's been a lot of them. The most recent were in the mid-1990s. And the water is very variable. The annual precipitation is very variable year to year, but also the storm events during a single year can be very variable, where we can get a storm after storm in a two-week period that will drop half the precipitation for that year. Or it could be spread out over the whole season. So we have to manage with that variability and try to infiltrate that water into the Salinas Valley. Now, fortunately, the Salinas Valley is quite long. The Salinas River travels to the northwest to the Monterey Bay, and so it has 80 miles to infiltrate water back into the aquifer. And what also helps is that in the late 1950s and the early 60s, the county built two dams to create two reservoirs, the Nacimiento Lake and the San Antonio Lake. Together, they have a total capacity to hold up to 700,000 acre feet of water. But as you can see currently, not a lot of water in there. 4% capacity in San Antonio, 16% in Nacimiento. So by managing the outflow from these reservoirs, the county can optimize infiltration and recharge back into the aquifer. And then in the fall, in a normal year, they would have those reservoirs empty enough so there's capacity to hold rainfall that's coming in for the next year to prevent flooding in the Salinas Valley. This is data from the Monterey County Water Resource Agency. They monitor well depths throughout the region in the Salinas Valley. And this is on the east side of the Salinas Valley. And you can see the depth to groundwater relative, actually, to sea level. And you see, first of all, this area, our groundwater is actually below sea level. And but the groundwater is fluctuating always during the season, where we deplete it during the irrigation season when we're growing the crops from late February into October, and then we start recharging during the winter months. So when we're trying to compare our groundwater depths, we have to compare for the same time of year. The red line there, that top one, that's their standard year, 1985, when it was just a normal rainfall year. That was how the water tables fluctuate. Currently, we're at the blue line, that's 2014. We've dropped below where we usually are in 2013, and we're actually at historically low levels. This is the drought year 1991. So we're definitely at some historically low levels in our groundwater. So the risk is we will accelerate seawater intrusion if we don't improve our recharge to the aquifer. And this is just a cross-section of the Salinas Valley that shows the two aquifers that we principally use, the 180-foot, the 400-foot aquifer. And only by having the groundwater level above sea level will it flow towards the ocean and keep out seawater. This is a map of the seawater intrusion in the 180-foot aquifer, and this is showing the line of 500 parts per million of chloride in the well water. So over the years, it's intruded first quite rapidly into the aquifer, but we've been able to slow it down in recent years, and I'll talk about how we've done that. But essentially 24,000 acres have been affected in the 180-foot aquifer and 10,500 in our lower aquifer. And if you are growing strawberries close to the coast, you end up with salinity problems, you know, as salt goes into your wells. And this is typical salt symptoms in strawberry. This is a field I looked at. It was just in view of the ocean, and their well was very high in chlorides. So one of the ways we are trying to reduce our pumping close to the coast to keep the groundwater level high enough is to replace that water with another water source. So we're using recycled water supplies. It's now supplying about 17,000 acres of farmland on the Central Coast. We have a program in the Salinas Valley, also in the Pajaro Valley. And this allows sewage that would normally go out into the ocean go through a tertiary treatment and a chlorination process, so it's usable for agriculture. But that water is fairly high in salts, and we're trying to always manage it by blending with another water source. So we have been blending it with groundwater from a few wells that are further away from the ocean, but we've also been just recently trying to divert water from the Salinas River, and they built this inflatable dam. So when there's enough extra water in Lake Nacimiento, they can release that water, capture it, and divert it over to the recycling facility and blend that water to a higher quality. As I mentioned, the lower Pajaro Valley is dealing with seawater intrusion, and this map shows the area presently of seawater intrusion, but the hatched area is where the groundwater is already below sea level. So this area is going to be very susceptible to further seawater intrusion. Now, where the Salinas Valley has options to get water to infiltrate over 80 miles, this valley is only 10 miles long. And we actually have a lot more rainfall and runoff over in Santa Cruz, but the area for infiltration is much more limited. So they're looking at possibilities to divert some of that surface water that's in sloughs into percolation ponds. And they have a pilot study going on that diverts it from the Harkin Slough. They are, like I mentioned, are using recycled water. And then they're doing research on finding the best areas to do what's called managed aquifer recharge. If we're going to have further percolation areas, they want to map those out, those zones out, where we get the best percolation to the groundwater. And I mentioned we have water quality problems. In the Salinas Valley, about a third of the wells are above the drinking water standards of 10 parts per million of nitrate N. And the study conducted by Harder and Lund and others from UC Davis, you know, determined that a majority of that nitrate contamination has come from agriculture. We have phosphorus and nitrate also coming into waterways that drain into the Monterey Bay and a lot of the estuaries that are important for marine life. And we have a lot of the land that's close to the oceans tile drained. So that tile drainage water is very high in nitrate as well as phosphate, orthophosphate. The issue is we're growing coastal crops that are very sensitive to water stress and salinity stress. So they need a lot of water, otherwise you have effects on their yield and the quality. They also need high inputs of nutrients. And the lettuce, for example, we're providing about 70% of the nation's supply just from this area. The challenge has been that historically our commodities have changed and have become more intensive. So in 1955, we grew vegetables, but it was 100,000 acres. Now, with double cropping, sometimes triple cropping, we're up to 300,000 acres. The grains and dry beans used to be 100,000 acres, less water intensive, now down to 10,000 acres. So the mix of crops has changed. But we have to give credit to the ag industry. They've increased their water use efficiency a lot during the last 50 years through better varieties, better growing techniques. The yields back in 1955 were much lower, and they used a lot more water. And so our water use efficiency in terms of cartons per acre foot has gone up fivefold since 1955. They've also changed how they're irrigating. It used to be dominated by furrow irrigation, and now we have a lot more drip irrigation. So crops are often started with sprinklers, and then they would switch to furrow traditionally. That was 64% of acres just back in 1993. That's dropped to 21% in 2010, and probably even less. And presently, we're at about 48% of the acres under drip irrigation, and probably presently even higher. The other aspect to trying to conserve water and use it more efficiently is to help growers use irrigation systems more effectively. So UC Cooperative Extension's partnered with Natural Resources Conservation Service, the Resource Conservation District's consultants, to develop a uniform way to evaluate irrigation system performance and give growers specific recommendations on how they can use their irrigation systems better. But just having a good irrigation system isn't the only key here. They have to schedule the water to match the crop needs, and we're trying to take advantage of weather information. There's a network of weather stations operated by the Department of Water Resources that measures evapotranspiration, and we've even developed online software that's specific for the coastal crops we're growing to help them do the irrigation scheduling. And then a very important part is the people actually on the ground doing the irrigating. And these are the irrigators, the foremen, the farm managers. Many of them haven't had more than a sixth grade education, but they're in charge of the water supply in terms of 91% of that water that's being applied. So we've developed a number of hands-on training workshops in Spanish, very appropriate level for their education, to get right to what they need to know to do a better job irrigating and managing these irrigation systems. Then I wanted to talk about runoff that we have during the winter from ag land. You can see that's a field that's bare. Growers want to get on those fields early in the season, so they often leave their fields bare. And after a few rainfalls, they become saturated, and we get a lot of runoff from these fields. And I think that's a lost opportunity for infiltrating a lot of that winter rain. So research we've done at Cooperative Extension is looked at what we call low biomass cover crops. And this is an option where a grower in the fall could put this in, and to minimize the residue from getting too much that they can't get in and plant, they put an herbicide application on and kill it when we have about half a ton of biomass per acre, or about a metric ton of biomass per hectare. And that keeps the residue from getting too extreme that they can't get it incorporated in the early spring. But the tests we've done on that have shown that we can greatly increase infiltration, even having this dead residue, because we protect the soil from the crusting impacts of raindrops. And so this comparison showed that, bare 47% of the rainfall ran off, but when we had a full cover crop of rye, this low residue cover crop, we kept it at just 2.3% running off the field. So it also helps with flooding, it helps with soil erosion. So just in summary, I think it's clear, on the Central Coast, we have to be self-reliant for our water supply. Agriculture is the majority of the users on the Central Coast, and they have to be the major solution in terms of future conservation of water. And we've always had a history of coming up with projects that can help improve the water supply on the Central Coast. I hope that continues, but I just want to leave you with a picture of the San Antonio Reservoir presently. And this was some advice that some young farmers and ranchers gave us. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, this talk was going on. I went out and called to have the air conditioning turned on higher. Hopefully you're feeling that it's a little bit cooler in here. I also need to know where the continuing education sheet is. It's bright orange. Who has that? Somebody put it back up here. That's useful. If you need continuing education units, you need to sign this and it will go straight into your account. Okay, any questions for Mike?
Yeah, thanks for your presentation. How is the allocation of water determined? Do growers get a certain quantity they're allowed to pump, or do they just pump as much as they want, or how's that done?
That's a very good question. How growers get their water and how much they can pump it varies depending on which management agency you're under. Now, by law, in California presently, everyone has a right to pump and use the water beneficially. But if you're in the Pajaro Valley, for example, that's a water purveyor, so they put a cost on the water. They're measuring the volume, and the more you use, the more you have to pay. In the Salinas Valley, we have a water management agency that is not a purveyor of water, so they cannot charge per unit of water pumped. And so the growers pay by the acre to support the agency, but they can pump as much as they want, and that agency cannot, at this point, restrict their pumping. So it's a tricky situation in the Salinas Valley. There's more, levers that they can use over in the Pajaro Valley.
I had a question on this runoff that you were showing here on your last at the end of your presentation, the last couple of slides. In that, is that a potential, if you improve the efficiency of that, do you see that as being a way to help mitigate some of the saltwater intrusion? And also, is that a potential point source for sediment contamination and other forms of contamination and stuff coming off these fields?
Well, I think if we could get a lot more of that rainfall to infiltrate, then that's going to help first with salinity issues that the growers often put extra water on anyway for salt control, and you're infiltrating water back into the aquifer. So, and that's a lot of farmland that we could do this on. And then as far as the sediment issues, yes, we spend tons of money in Monterey County cleaning out all the sediment that clogs up drainage systems, the public drains, and then it has a water quality impact. And the sediments are carrying pesticides and nutrients, so that has that environmental effect. And this is I think, low-hanging fruit as far as trying to improve our water recharge in that area that growers could really help with. But they're concerned about the cost of planting a cover crop. It's still going to cost them maybe $100 an acre to put those low biomass cover crops in.
Any other questions? We have time for one more.
By using the recycled water, does that mean you're assigning that water to be always used only for irrigation and never for drinking water, or is there some cleansing effect of recycling it through the aquifer?
The recycled water we have goes through a tertiary treatment. It doesn't get pushed back into the aquifer. It goes. We have a distribution system. We call it purple pipe water. So. At the sewage treatment plant, essentially this tertiary treatment gets it clean enough that it can now be used for agriculture. and not for drinking water. If you were going to use it for drinking water, usually what has to happen then is some reverse osmosis step, and then usually they infiltrate it back into the ground and then pump it out. Because the idea for people to take sewage water and drink it, it just, they don't like that. And so we don't go there. It's much better to just avoid pumping as much by replacing agricultural water. It costs maybe $200 to $300 an acre foot to do this recycling process versus maybe $800 to $1,000 for doing reverse osmosis per acre foot. So it's an economical way to go.
I have one question online, so I gotta go back to the computer here. As per irrigation schedules, in parentheses consultants, in the coastal region, what would be the most important action to implement in 2015 to increase WUE?
Well, that's a great question. Growers use a lot of water establishing their crops in the Salinas Valley, whether it's strawberry transplants or germinating up lettuce. And where we need better irrigation scheduling is probably in the establishment. That's about a third of the water that's applied. And often I've done trials, and we know we could at least cut that in half. So that's would be the area I would focus on.